Good morning. If you would like to turn with me, we will be reading from the book of Luke this morning, chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they may find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here." And he rose and stood there. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to destroy it?" And after looking around at them, all he said to them, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. This is the word of the Lord.
Hi, good morning. Thankful to be back. I got to remember where the stand is. All right, it's right here. I'm going to put this on. I don't know if you were here last time that I was here, but I remember talking about parachuting in to your church. I think we were in College Park at the time. We drove like an hour and a 15, hour and a half or something. Can't remember. I was like, this is weird. I'm going to drive an hour, 15 minutes to this church I've never been to, and then I'm going to get up in front of everybody. I'm going to try to preach a sermon to them. It's a funny thing, and it just humbles me and reminds me that, you know, we rely on God to translate this word to us, to communicate it to us, and I will pray for that in a second. But again, just want to thank you again for inviting me, or at least you can thank Brian, whether I do a good job or not, for inviting me to come preach on his behalf. You know, give him a rough time if it was disappointing, and give me all the credit if it was awesome. So my wife, Jamie, and my daughter, Marion. Hi, Marion. Eating goldfish right there are here. I bring up Marion now because our message is about asking why. And some of y'all probably, Marion's our only child, so she so far has not learned that word yet, thankfully. But maybe some of you can testify to your children being like, you're like, "All right, kids, we're going to church this morning. Why?" And maybe some of you kids out there right now, you're like, "Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to wake up early on Sunday morning. It's like, why do we go to church? Why?" What are some random why questions? You know, why do I need to go to sleep? Why do I need to eat dinner? I don't know why. It's always dinner that's the problem with Marion. It's like, lunch is fine. Snacks are awesome. They're always welcome. But don't know why we have to eat dinner. Like, she just can't. So I'm like, "All right, Marion, let's have dinner." And then we just bought a new house, and it's like a circle from the living room to the kitchen, to the dining room, back to the living room again. And she just makes, you know, it's like she doesn't understand why she has to eat chicken at like 6 p.m. She's like, "I'll eat it for lunch and I'll eat it fried, but at Chick-fil-A, but I cannot eat it at dinner time. This is no way." So that's my cheeky intro into this passage. This passage is great because I think it's great because it leaves us with these questions of why. Why the Pharisees? What was going on? Why is it important that it was the Sabbath? What's the context? Why is it another Sabbath as opposed to the first Sabbath that they're referencing? Why? Why Jesus? Why did he do it the way he did it? Da-da-da-da-da. And I invite you to ask why this morning as we look at his word. So with that, let me get to it, and let me start my timer so I don't talk too long. All right, so first thing before we get to why, I'm going to ask what. So what happens? It says, on another Sabbath, this is verse 6, he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so they might find a reason to accuse him. So obviously something had just happened where in the verses before, there's it's a Sabbath, and the disciples had picked some grains to like feed themselves, ate those grains. And of course, the Pharisees questioned them. I talked about the Jesus juke last time. I don't know if you remember that. But, you know, Jesus has this way of kind of avoiding the traps that the Pharisees try to lay for him. But on this occasion, it says on another Sabbath, so there's a different time, Jesus goes into the synagogue and is teaching. And there's a man with like a deformed hand of some kind. There's something wrong with his hand. We're not sure if he was born with that or if something happened, but points out that there's this man that has this withered hand. And it says, and the scribes and the Pharisees watched him, watched Jesus, to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might find a reason to accuse him. So another thing that's going on is, I think it's kind of silly, but it's just imagine Jesus is going around doing his thing, the Jesus way, and then there's just like a group of guys, well-dressed and studious and everything, and they're just following around this poor carpenter and trying to figure out ways to mess him up. I mean, that's just kind of silly, but that's what's happening. They're like trying to catch him. They're just watching him closely. It's like, what's going on? But that's what they're doing. I guess they followed him into the synagogue. So that's happening. In verse 8, but he knew their thoughts, this is Jesus, knew the Pharisees' thoughts and the scribes' thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, come and stand here. So he invites this man with the withered hand to come stand by him or close to him. And that's important. Maybe we can get there in a second. And Jesus said to them, I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to destroy it? So he presents this question to the Pharisees and scribes. And one of the ways that's really helpful for teaching people is to ask them a question. Let them think about it. Let them, marinate on it? No, that doesn't sound right. Ruminate on it. Think about it. Come to your own conclusion about it. You're not just, you know, I might be doing this to you right now, so just, you know, pay attention. I'm asking these questions so you can think about it. Why did the Pharisees, you know, why were the Pharisees trying to accuse Jesus? Why was Jesus doing what he was doing? Ask yourself these questions. You might come to a conclusion, and you might believe it. But yeah, he's asking them this question, and it's a curious question, you know. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or destroy it? I mean, tricky question, but not tricky. But Jesus asked them that. And after he asked this question, verse 10, and after looking around at them at the Pharisees and scribes, he said to them, stretch out your hand. So he's speaking to the man with the withered hand. And he did so. The man with the withered hand stuck out his hand, and his hand was restored. So scribes and Pharisees are standing around trying to catch Jesus out. Jesus asked this kind of mysterious, difficult question, and then he tells the man with the withered hand to stick out his hand, and then it's just miraculously restored because Jesus chose to heal this man in his withered hand. And what do the Pharisees and scribes do? All right, this is not a rhetorical question. What do scribes and Pharisees, like, what do they do once they see this? They get angry. Yes, they got furious, right? Why so furious? That's my question for us today. What else do they do? They feel a fury. They discuss how to kill him. Yikes. Jesus heals a dude, and then these guys are like, let's get him. What? That's Huh?
What?
He asked them, is it good to heal? Is it good to do good on the Sabbath, or to do evil, to do harm, or to save a life? He heals this dude's hand. And then they like start planning to kill him. All right, come on. That's good, right? You gotta ask why. And then after you ask why, you gotta ask why again. And you gotta ask why again, because I'm the annoying why guy. I met my wife, Jamie, in London. I was serving over there, helping out with a church plant over there. It's New City Church in London. And my teammates started complaining about me. And behind my back, they started calling me Mr. Why. The reason they call me Mr. Why is because, I don't know, I don't think I was that curious of a kid growing up, but eventually I came to the point where I wasn't really willing to do anything unless I understood why. I felt, at best, I was looking for a principle behind it. It's like, if we're going to do a food distribution for the homeless in Shepherd's Bush, I want to know why and how it connects with our ministry in the church. Like, why? How is this going to proclaim Jesus? How is this rooted in the Word? Like, why are we doing this? I want to know why. At best, I wanted to be rooted in the Word. I wanted to be rooted in obedience. But at worst, I was just being annoying. I was like, well, I don't want to do it unless I know. I want to know why for myself. So that's my second question. You know, the first question is what happened, but why? Why were they doing what they were doing? Ask that question afresh. Like, what was it that Jesus was doing that was so unholy or so irritable or outrageous or rebellious that they were following him around trying to, like, catch him? And then when he heals a guy's hand on the Sabbath, that was enough for them to try to murder him. Why? All right. We've done the meta. We're asking why these people, they're like 2,000 years old. We don't know them. Don't know the culture too well. We know some things. We don't know. Let's come back to us. Why does Elvis get so mad when people don't use their signal? Why? So furious, Elvis. I mean, no joke. Surely I used this illustration last time. Like, on the way here from College Park, surely somebody did the worst thing, and the worst came out of me. I was like, oh, I'm so mad at them. I'm so mad. So some of you can relate. Some of you are not even driving yet, so I'm sorry. You can't relate to that. But maybe you can at least witness to your parents' behavior when they're driving. You don't have to say it. But I at least have to say, again, here we go. I'll make myself look good. At best, I have a lovely wife and daughter, and I want them to be protected. So when somebody doesn't use their signal and they cut me off, I'm like, no, you're so mad. I'm mad at you because you endangered my wife and child, at best. At worst, Elvis thinks he's a better driver than everybody else in the world. At best. I'll share this quick illustration. The other day, I was in the left turn lane, okay? So left turn lane, the signal's red. It's a turn signal. And it goes green, so I can turn left, okay? So start going left. The car in front of me, the woman had been on her phone and was looking at her phone. And as soon as I started turning and the car next to her started turning, she thinks in her head peripherally that it's her time to go. So she starts going straight. And I'm turning left, so she's coming at me, and I'm turning left, so she's about to hit me. She lays on the horn. Bing! And she starts waving her finger. And Elvis is such a good Christian, is like, oh, I'm so sorry that you, oh, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Nope. I'm like, no, you, it's you. You're the one who did it wrong. It was embarrassing. I was like, no, you're wrong. I'm right. You're wrong. I'm right. You're wrong. I'm right. So I'm waving my finger with anger in my heart. And she kind of, I could see her through the windshield. She kind of just like, she relented. Uh-oh. I was like, yes, you were wrong. And I told you you were wrong. You admitted it. Oh, how righteous am I? Oh, no. Crippling self-righteousness. I felt so good for like 3 seconds. And then I drove off safely. And I was like, wow, how wicked am I? I just had to be right. Why? Why did I have to be right? I'll confess to you. Last time I didn't confess to you. I had to be right because I've created a law to myself and to everybody else, and I transpose it on all of you. The law is you must drive correctly and consistently, and you must drive safely. Unless it's me, then you can, you know, drive by the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. I can go 9 miles per hour over the speed limit. And that's why I had to be right. I had to be right because if I'm not right, then I'm wrong. And I've broken my own law. And if I've broken my own law, I condemn myself. And I condemn others. So I felt like I had to be right in that situation. So God taught me a big lesson that day. Because it was like, well, she admitted that she was wrong. And she was right to admit that she was wrong. I was not right. I was not good. I was not kind or generous or compassionate. I just wasn't right, even though I was right. Why so furious? Why do we get so upset on how the dishwasher is supposed to be loaded? Why do we get so upset when our like baseball team has a catastrophic beginning to the season? You know, why do we get so upset when we don't get a good grade on our test at school? You know, why do we get so angry about things? Why? I think sometimes anger is good. Sometimes anger is righteous and justified. I'm not saying that anger is altogether bad. But what I'm seeing in this passage is scribes and Pharisees who are dedicating their entire lives to building a law unto themselves so that they can have the best seats and they can be at the top of the order. And we do that for ourselves, too, in our own lives. It's like, I have a perfect way of doing it, and nobody can break that way of doing it. Like, this is how I mow my lawn. This is how I do my dishes. This is how I keep my house. This is how I dress. This is how I eat. This is how I exercise, you know? All can be good things and need to be taken care of well. But we're always being tempted to create a law. So Elvis is going to be annoying again. But why? Why do that? Well, I'll just tell you why I do it. It makes me feel better. I'm kind of insecure about not doing things well. I don't want to pay the cost of feeling insecure when things don't go my way. I want to create a way of doing things perfectly and then do it. But the problem is, when I do that, when I fail, then it just all crumbles. It's sand. It's sinking sand. It's my own law, and it fails me. Because the truth is, the law that God offers to us is not to lord over us. And I think this is kind of a radical concept. When it says, do not murder, is that just some kind of arbitrary law that God created for us? Or is that for our good? For our good, thankfully. do not steal, do not gossip. I mean, people really get struggle with the gossip thing because it's like, well, they didn't hear me gossip about them, so it didn't do any harm, right? But even gossip, as you're, if you're gossiping with or about somebody, you're creating this, I'm thinking meta here, like you're hurting your community. You're hurting your soul. You're hurting that person's soul if you're inviting them into that gossip. But it's not an arbitrary thing. The law is there for a purpose. When it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, like, that's not him being narcissistic. That's what we were created for. That's the relationship that he created us for with him. And we do well when we have that, when we seek that. Yeah, so I think, again, Jesus healing this man, causing the Pharisees to respond in a murderous way, is not that crazy. I mean, I can't say that I didn't have a murderous heart of anger when that woman, you know, tried to condemn me for driving with the signal. But it's so difficult for the Pharisees and the scribes and for us to really believe and trust that mommy's not is gonna not leave me. It's really difficult for us to believe, to be so vulnerable, to believe that he's not going to condemn us, to betray us, to all of a sudden not be merciful or not be just. And so in that way, I can empathize and relate to the scribes and Pharisees, because at some point in my life, the outworking of my life looks like I can't trust him with this thing, right? I can't quite trust. I have to make a law. I need a tangible way to feel like I'm in control of my destiny, of my salvation. Because what if he's not good? And my experience of life is not always good. And you should recognize that and name that, because you are living in a broken world. You are living in between redemption and restoration. We are, Deep Run Church is, here we go. If I put some dots up here, the beginning, creation, God created us. This is a good rubric for like the biblical storyline. So creation, he created us. For himself and his pleasure in his image. There's creation, Genesis 1, 2. Genesis 3, there's the rebellion. Adam and Eve rebel against God and representing all of humanity, bring a curse upon themselves. Fast forward, Jesus dies for us, lives the life that we couldn't live, and died the death that we don't want to die for the ways that we failed him. And then there's restoration, what he promises in Revelation, that he will make all things new. There will no longer be murder. There will no longer be death. There will no longer be tears. And Deep Run Church, where we're at right now, is between Jesus justifying us with his death and his life, and him coming again to make all things new. So for now, we're stuck in this really difficult situation that's called life. And you have real heartaches. You know, you have to attend funerals of your grandparents, like Jamie and I did this past week. You have to attend funerals of your friends. You have to talk to your kids about really difficult things about identity and bullying. And you who are younger have to talk to your parents about the things that you struggle with and that you don't understand. You live in a difficult place. So my last question is, who's going to save us? Who's going to help us? Jesus is going to help us, for sure. We're advised to, he gives us his word. I mean, just his word itself. It's just so rich. It's really long and sometimes boring and complicated. But in Colossians, you know, Paul's teaching us in the Colossian church, he's like, don't get caught up in asceticism. He even talks about that. Don't get caught up. Asceticism is this fancy word for like creating a law for yourself, like making up a law for yourself. Don't get caught up in every wind of doctrine that you hear. Anything that you get on the news, like seek the Lord, seek him. My question is not, so I've answered my own question of why I think the Pharisees and the scribes would want to murder Jesus. I mean, he essentially is going to debunk their whole system. Everything that they've worked their entire, all that seminary training that Elvis did, and all that experience on the mission field and preaching at Deep Run, all that's going to be gone. It's going to be like whatever, because if it was a law for myself, then it wasn't for God. It wasn't for God. And so Jesus is, you know, challenging them because they're being legalistic. They are trying to follow a law that they added. They were like, you can't even heal somebody on the Sabbath. You can't even heal somebody on the Sabbath. You can't even save a life on the Sabbath. But the better question to ask is ourselves is, why would Jesus let them do that? Why would Jesus let them plot to murder him? And why would Jesus allow himself to be murdered on the cross? For our salvation? Okay. Yes. But why? Didn't have to. Did he allow himself to be murdered to be just? No. It wasn't just for him to die on the cross. Maybe it's because he can't help but be merciful. Maybe that's who he is. Just and merciful. Perfect dichotomy right there. So when you question even some of the difficult things of your life, especially the hurt that you've experienced, you're going to want Jesus to be just and bring justice to those things. You definitely want that. But you kind of don't want him to be just about the things that you've done wrong. That's scary. So this is how he does it. He's both just. He'll bring justice to all the wrong that's ever been done to you. Period. He'll also bring justice to everything that you've ever done wrong. Period. But if he's also merciful, he invites you to receive his mercy for all the things that you've ever done wrong, that you are doing wrong, and that you will do wrong. Anything that you ever did not do right, perfect. You failed at, got angry at the wrong time, whatever it was. He will give you mercy. So how is he going to do that? He's going to going to take the fall for it. It's the fall guy. You're standing in the courtroom. You're about to be judged for the ways that you don't even know that you did wrong. The ways you couldn't even intentionally have failed. You're standing and you're about to be condemned. And he's just going to swipe in. He's going to stand there and say, I'll take it. I'll take it for you. This is why it's good news. This is why we follow Jesus, the person, and we do not follow a religion created out of Jesus. It's Jesus that we are following. It's Jesus that we are worshiping. Why is he so merciful to us? I can't say I know really why, but I think that's just who he is. Why so merciful, Jesus? I can ask you that the rest of my life. Let me pray. Father, it is funny that you've given me this question of why, and you even pushed me to ask why get up in the morning? Why am I living this life? And you still brought me to yourself. Thank you. Thank you for inviting us here this morning to know that you're merciful and to attempt to have faith that you are not only merciful but just, and not only just but merciful. Thank you for that gift, and I pray, Spirit, that you would work in our hearts in such a way that even when we have those hardened moments where we don't want to believe that you are merciful, that you will break through and show us, and that we will have the courage to have faith in you and your justification, your salvation. Thank you for your mercy, Lord. May we follow you all the days of our lives, and may the fruit of that belief be shown to everybody around us. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.